Dre Rocka, 92.5 The Beat of Salt Lake, All Rock Media, and you are listening to the Will Wonder Pod.
Bars, let's go, y'all. This is Gabino Grimes, Mike Masters Alliance, Rap Battle's finest out here in Utah. And you are now listening to one of my best friends' podcasts, the Will Wonder Pod.
Real quick, let me just start off by saying this is Peter Rosenberg, your forever 24/7 champion, host of the GP Podcast. And I want to shout out the Will Wonder Podcast.
What's going on? This is Brisk Warner, and you're checking on my man DJ Will Wonder on the Will Wonder Podcast. Yeah.
What's up, everybody? This is Emerson Kennedy, world famous Scarlett Johansson lover, world renowned Jordan denier, and I hope you are tuning into my personal favorite podcast, the Will Wonder Podcast. That's my brother for real. He has terrible takes, but I'm still listening, man. Will, what's up?
What's up? What's up?
Ladies and gentlemen, episode 141 of the Will Wonder Pod, and I don't have a lot of time today. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm recording this earlier in the week to be released on Wednesday, but I'm going out of town. So, a few things that I wanted to touch on in this intro. Biggest thing being in NBA news, Dame Lillard going to Milwaukee for Jrue Holiday. Holiday heads to Portland. DeAndre Ayton from the Suns heads to Portland. Portland also gets some unprotected firsts. Phoenix gets Yusuf Nurkic, Grayson Allen, Nasir Little, and Keon Johnson. I think Phoenix lost this trade. I know they wanted to get away from DeAndre Ayton, but I like Nurkic as a player. He just can't seem to stay healthy. Grayson Allen is at best a ninth guy off the bench. Nasir Little, Keon Johnson, even though Nasir Little was, you know, Tar Heel, neither one of them have really done anything in the NBA as of yet, but still very young, so maybe they show some promise. So Phoenix loses this. Milwaukee wins. Portland then moves Jrue Holiday to Boston, which, holy cow. Goes to Boston for Robert Williams, Malcolm Brogdon, and a 2024 first-round pick from Golden State. And Boston sends a 2029 unprotected, their own, to the Blazers. This is huge for Boston. I mean, Robert Williams will be missed defensive-wise. I think, obviously, Jrue Holiday is a huge upgrade for Malcolm Brogdon. Stays healthy. Maybe not quite as good of an outside shooter, but definitely better defensively. So this then sets up, in my opinion, of course, saying everyone stays healthy, a Boston-Milwaukee Eastern Conference Finals. And whoever wins that would, of course, get Denver or Phoenix. Again, barring any injuries. NBA should be a lot of fun, though. But what a crazy weekend in NBA moves. And we still have James Harden hanging out in Philly, trying his damnedest to get out of there. Not showing up to media day. Not really caring either. So keep your eyes on that. I don't know what team wants James Harden for what Daryl Morey and Philly would be asking for, but weirder things have happened. Damian Lillard to the Bucks. All right, I do know we had a full slate of NFL games, but again, I don't have a ton of time. I wasn't able to coordinate with Hoop and Chacon, so I promise you next week we'll be back talking about the NFL. So what can you expect on episode 141 of the Will Wonder Pod? Well, I have my interview with Musa Aydin. Producer, actor, this guy has an amazing story coming from Somalia as a 10-year-old kid to the United States. He talks about adapting to the way life is in the United States, learning the language, having a crazy incident in high school where he actually got stabbed in the neck, all the way to finding his way to acting in film and producing film. So I hope you enjoy that. After that, we will have day four of 31 Days of Halloween, talking about the movie Smile. Love that film. If you haven't been able to listen to the 31 Days of Halloween so far, make sure you go back in the archive, whether on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, you can listen to those all underneath 10 minutes. a piece so far, but in the future, these will get a little bit longer as I have guests come on and talk about their favorite horror films. So thank you so much. Hope you have a great week. Hope you're having a great week. We'll get into that interview with Musa Aiden and then day 4 of 31 Days of Halloween. Smile.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Will Wonder Pod interviews. I have a very special guest today. I'm excited to interview this guy, actor, producer, father, former hip-hop star, from what I understand, out here in Salt Lake City. Musa Aiden. Musa, how are you?
Doing good, man. Thanks for having me, bro.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. We're going to dive into a lot of stuff, man. We're going to go all over the place, but like what I like to do with everybody is start off right from the beginning. So start off from childhood. I read a little bit about you.
Okay.
From Somalia, there was a civil war going on there.
Right.
So I want to back up. I'm assuming, and I don't know, you can correct me if I'm wrong, was this going on the whole time you were there, or was it?
No. So my dad was a businessman. Before the war happened, I was a little baby, before the war even started. So he came, he knew what's about to happen, so he was already in Italy. Then he called my family, said, you know what, we need to get out. So take the family, go take a plane, go to Kenya. That's it. That's all we knew. And we fly there, went to Kenya. So we stayed there for a couple of years, and we thought, okay, it's going to get better, so let's go back.
Yeah.
So that was the bad decision to go back. When we go back is when the war even gets worse, and that's when the Black Hawk down, and you see bodies everywhere, and yeah. And Man. That's when we said, you know what, that's it.
Yeah.
We need to just go back, Kenya.
Yeah.
And that's how we started from Somalia.
So as a child, like, what was life like for you in Somalia prior to that? Do you remember? Like, I mean, 10, you know, is a relatively, not old age, yeah, but you have memories from back then.
The only memories I have, honestly, which is sad, with Somalia is that it's war, right? People, they live in that, you know what I mean? Like, you can hear. It's like, so there's a point that, you know what I mean, the gun doesn't even scare you anymore.
Jeez.
Yeah, no, for real. It's like, it becomes like, if you hear like a couple of shots and everything, that's also nothing. But when it's like a big boom and all of a sudden, that's like, okay, there's a war going on. Everybody, put your head down. You know, let's get through it tomorrow. So at that point, everybody, they were like, okay, let's just go through till tomorrow. You see, that kind of life, like, I want to live till tomorrow. That's how it was, right? Yeah. And the childhood out there was not good because you can't go outside anymore. You can't, because when you're young, 10 years old, 8 years old, you want to go play with, hang out with friends or whatever you have to do, but now, not anymore. And then you see that, you think that when Black Hawk Down, American, Italy, come in, thinking that it's going to get better, but it's not. They're looking for someone, but they're making a lot of mess. And that's even scarier because you don't know who's a good guy, you don't know who's a bad guy.
Yeah.
So you need to get the hell out of there. So, and that's, we were in the core, Bakata, close to, so I used to live in what was called a Holwadak, close to Bakata. And that was the craziest place ever. So in the Mogadishu. So there's no sleep out there. Yeah. You know what I mean? There's always something going on. There's always somebody's getting killed. There's always bodies on the street. So that's why my family, they couldn't even live there. So we had to get out, go to Kenya, and that's how we end up here.
Where do you fall? Like, you have brothers, sisters?
So I have, for my family, I have a younger brother and 4 sisters. But I also have a brother from my dad's side.
Okay.
So he was in Utah by that time. Was going to University of Utah before he moved to Canada. That's when we were in Kenya, so that's when he called my dad and said, hey, you guys want to come with me in Canada or you guys want to come to the United States? The funny thing is, nobody knew what the heck is Utah is. Yes, we know United States. Yeah, we know. You know, anybody out there, you can tell, on USA, okay, New York, yeah. California.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, not a lot of places you can name it. But nobody knew where Utah is.
Yeah.
So my mom, she knows Canada. She's like, no, I don't want to go a place that's snow. Take me to the United States. She has no idea. Damn. We come here snowing on December.
Yeah.
And I remember that we at the airport, my mom and my brother from my dad's side arguing. I told you I don't want to go to Canada. I told you. They're like, I can hear it. And my brother's trying to call my mom down. It's like, hey, look at the flag.
Yeah.
And she stayed here, I believe, 3 years, and okay. she moved to San Diego.
She's like, I'm out. I don't
know. Yeah. It's just no, because of her health, and it's not gonna go well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. What, man, so coming from a place where, like you said, like gunshots are normal, you know, you're just trying to get to the next day, then coming to a place like Utah where, you know, it's not anything like that. How did you get used to life in Utah, or I guess, you know, in the States in general, but in Utah, coming from where you were from, like, did it take a while to trust people, or what was that like for you?
it's hard. For me, actually, I knew English a little bit, like, okay. because in Kenya, the second language is British, English.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew a little bit. I can understand it when I come here. So going to school and everything, I was always outgoing person. I like to get to know people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And believe me or not, I did not learn how to speak English in the school. I learned from friends, people mm-hmm. I hang out with. So I always trying to hang out with people who are not from my country.
Okay.
So I tried to. I got my ass whooped a couple of times. Then I went to after middle school, I went to Highland High School.
Okay.
Which is not fun, and that's when I got my cut on my neck because of, you gotta understand, like, what side you're gonna be on, and which is, we don't have that in Somali. We don't have that gang.
Yeah.
Yes, we have only one thing, like, you know, I mean, there's the bad people, there's the good people, simple as that.
Right.
In here is way that, and back then, as you know, Utah, if you wear a certain color clothes,
mm-hmm.
you either have to be one side. Yeah. So, and I remember that I was in a cafeteria. One of my cousin and one of my good friend, there was a fight in the cafeteria, but they had a crew. But the crew didn't know me, but these two knew who I am.
Yeah.
All I was trying to do is stop people. But I didn't even feel it because somebody walked by me and cut me, but I didn't feel that at all until my shirt got heavier.
And Jesus.
I know, and I walked away, I ran away. And then my friend said, hey, you're bleeding. I looked at it, I already panicked, run away. And as you know, back then, you can't snitch. That's the mentality, which is the stupidest mentality ever. Mm. You can't snitch. So I ran away, stayed at my friend's house, ran away from mom's house. I thought that was a great idea. I'm not a snitch. I didn't snitch nothing. I thought it was going to heal. So, yeah. But, yeah, to go back to your question, it wasn't easy getting to know people here because, one, no matter what color your skin, they're still going to cheat you. No matter where you come from, Africa, or you're born here, it don't matter.
Yeah.
You're still African-American, no matter where you come mm-hmm. from. I had to adapt that. I have to learn that. I have to learn who to hang out with. So then I cut people that I don't know because we're not the same culture because I wasn't growing with them. I wasn't learning other than English, so I started hanging out with friends, and that's where the music come from.
Mm.
Yeah.
Man, so I want to... Jeez, that was a lot. I want to back up to when this happened.
Okay.
So you said you go to your friend's house. So no, like, you didn't go to the hospital, nope. None of that. You nope. just, what did your, and you said your mom was still here then, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so what did she say once you actually came home?
Oh, yeah. So I was missing school because I wasn't going to school at all.
Okay. Well, you just got stabbed.
Yeah, because they have to ask me a question because they knew it happened in the school. So yeah. They question everybody. Mm. Going back to my mom's house, because that time the scar was not that big, but it was healing.
Yeah.
But if the infection is there, you think it's healing, but it's not. It's right. infecting inside.
Yep.
Going back to my mom's house, she find out. First thing she said that, yes, you run away. You think that was a great idea. What about if you die that time?
Yeah.
What will happen, right? As a kid, I didn't know, and she has the right to say everything. So she was mad because of the action that I took, mm-hmm. that it was not a great action that I had to leave. But I learned my lesson from there, and then I had to change the school to go to another school and to finish my high school. And but it wasn't a way that I wanted to end. I wish I could, like, as of right now, I'm grown and father and everything. If I can go back, first thing I will do, like, stay where I was at. Right, mm-hmm. I don't care how much trouble I am. I'm already in trouble. Just get help, let them stitches, and I wouldn't even have that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had 3 different surgeries just to get like this.
Jeez.
If you see me last year, you're like, what the heck? Because it was bumped.
Uh-huh.
always infection, always hair growing in the middle. So it was bad. So I had to spend money. And thanks to Dr. Jerry, he's a plastic surgeon. He helped me a lot. So mm-hmm. he did two surgeries because they had to cut around it, remove mm-hmm. it, heal it. Then I had to go back. Then this time they had to put me down because last time he said you were moving. So they had the stitches inside instead of outside.
Got it.
Yeah. No, it wasn't fun. So I will not encourage everybody to be a hero because yeah. at the end of the day, this is your life. Yeah, you know what I mean? So, and it's in a bad spot. Imagine a couple of veins got cut.
Well, yeah, and it could have, yeah. I mean, a centimeter away, you know
but,
what I mean?
But I thought I was the shit. I was the gang. So I was like, I'm not snitching. You see, look how I'm the gang. But yeah, that was bad.
My God, man. Yeah. Jesus Christ. So, okay. Did you come here when you were 10? Is that the age that you flew mm-hmm. or you guys came to the United States?
I was almost 10. And the school that I was going, they had to start me for the, you know, right away, middle school. So I missed a lot. I believe I only stayed in middle school for a couple of months. Then already freshman in high school already. When you come into United States and mm-hmm. your country, there's a war, you have no option other than what the age they give you here.
Got it.
Yeah. I came in as 10 years old. But the age that got me here, it was like I'm already on a 9th grade in high school or 8th grade in middle school, uh-huh. which is, that's not what it's supposed to be. So I was supposed to be like in finishing middle school, they didn't go to. But that time you can't go back and get your certificate because they know there's a war going on. There's no president. So they're like, nope, that's what it's going to be. So we have to go with that. Yeah, I wasn't here with my real age, missed an education, but I always catch up and end up finishing my high school. But yeah. It's crazy. A lot of people, you see a kid that you can tell is only 10 years old, the age they got him from here, just to get him here, is 16, 17 years old, but he's not that age.
How does that work out? Like, they did, like, so they just kind of give you an age, even though, I mean, you know how old you are, but you don't necessarily have your certificate or any type of birth information.
Until you prove it. But that moment, now they're accepting it because there's a government there. Back then, they didn't.
Got it.
They will allow you to have your real name. Right, so they, as if you look at a lot of refugees right now, you will see all the months is January.
Okay.
My birth is March 3rd. Everybody they have to give a January, because of their excuse that because of this war going on, I don't care what you tell me. You know what I mean? I don't care what kind of paper you have, because there's no government you have out there. Yeah. So they have to do that way, and. That's why I had to start in 8th grade. I could have started good from fresh. I couldn't because I have to go with the age the paper saying.
That is nuts. Because, how do you put a 10-year-old with, 14-year-old kids? It's
you tell me about it. Because the funny thing is when they took me, so my brother from my dad's side, when he took me to school and signed me up, he was trying to explain to them. It's like, hey, this is the real age. He had even papers that shows our real age.
Yeah.
They couldn't because they said, this is not a paper from here. This is a paper from another country. Mm. So we do the best we can. We will give them as much education they can get, but we have to follow. And back then, there was there's no way around it. Where now people understand it, people know, because when you have how many millions of refugees and all are January 1st, they can't be that.
Exactly,
So now they understand it.
A whole bunch of New Year's babies all of them around
January,
here.
It's not even January, January 1st, January 1st. And when I was getting my passport and I tried to change it, they won't let me.
Wow.
Yeah, they won't let me at all. They're like, I'm sorry, they can't.
Yeah.
I said, you know what? I don't care. It's a couple of years. Why not? I'm just going to go with that. So I'll do my driving earlier, being 21 earlier, so why not?
Yeah,
but I feel bad that people have to deal with. They have to understand people losing a time to learn education because of the age. But for us, though, all we were thinking is that we need to get out the country.
Yeah,
we are in the same a safe place, and that's the other thing. It's not a safe place. Mm-hmm. That's the other thing is, because a lot of people don't understand. Coming, leaving everything behind. So imagine this, okay? You from here. Mm-hmm. You own your house. There's no mortgage, okay? You own your own car. There's no car payment. The only thing you actually worry about is just go ahead, work, and you own a farm and everything. You don't worry about bills and everything because everything you produced, right? Yeah. You left all that behind. You have zero. You come here in this country. What they give you? They give you a couple of months for Section 8. they give you food stamp for a couple. They give you food stamp, but if you work, that shit cut off.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what kind of work are you gonna get? You just got here.
Yeah.
You don't even have no degrees. You're gonna work at the warehouse, and even though they know that you only work at warehouse, why they cut your stuff? Now they're gonna build you. You have to work, right? Or can I just go to school and not pay? No, you have to work because you're old enough. So we have to survive where we used to live, like everything we have. Now we have to work crazy, right? So we have to adapt that. We have to get used to that. I remember that I was, with the fake age, I was like, 11th grade?
Mm-hmm.
I used to look for a part-time job to help my family because there's no other way around it because I can't let my mom wake up 5 a.m., go to warehouse, and right. I'm going to school like everything was okay. Now, that's not the life that I wanted to live. So that's why I adapt working, and that's why I become workaholic because it started from young age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like, I mean, you know, this is my first time meeting you, but just following you on socials and looking at the stuff you've done, it seems like you're always working or doing something.
You have to. Right. I have to be example. As of right now that I'm a father, I have to be example for my kid to show them that, you know, nothing comes easy in this country.
Mm-hmm.
You got to have to earn it, you know what I mean, in order for you to, you know what I mean, yeah, you said like I have it, you have to like, go ahead and work hard and get that. So every day when I wake up, that's my mentality. Like, you know, and also the people that I work with around me, like the production people around me, they are hardworking people. So that helps me the energy to do what I do every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I should have asked, around what year is this when you come to the States?
On here?
Yeah.
It was like, I think it was 1997, end of 1997, yeah, end of December. Yeah.
So a 10-year-old
yeah.
in 97, yeah. and then you have to go to junior high, and then you're yeah. done with high school early.
High school early. But I used to go night school. So because I had to work part-time, and
yeah.
sometimes I can't even cut up my homework and everything. I used to work at 7-Eleven here or there. And I have this guy on a 7-Eleven. He let me work with that because of, and he also get in trouble. Sorry about him. But in the morning, I used to wake up, I throw away newspapers because I used to ride a bike.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Then I used to do, so I used to work here, there, just to help something around. So that way, you know, I'm bringing money in the house.
Yeah.
But also the homework and the stuff, I wasn't getting it right. So they assigned me to go to night school. So everything when I'm done, I'll go to night school, like Jeez. 3 days a week. And to make it on my credit. So,
mm-hmm.
But I pulled off everything and get my degree, I mean, high school. And before I even started for my college, it's when I had my first baby.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
Man, me and my wife have one yeah. kid, a boy, just he's 5 and a half now. And, you know, I was in my 30s, obviously, when he's born. And I'm like, holy shit. So you being, you know, just out of high school.
Just in high school, bro.
Yeah, yeah. What was that? I mean, what was going through your head when your first child comes?
So before she was born, and I was young and think I was the shit.
Yeah.
I was a hip-hop, Somali hip-hop. I used to make music.
Yeah.
And I used to be not shy, do whatever I want to do. I used to... I love hip. So this is the fact, I had a passion for hip hop, but that time I didn't want it to do in English because my English was not that good, but I was really, really good at Somali.
Mm.
So because I liked the beat and everything, I used to change it in Somali and bring in hip hop. And doing that, and people were like, oh, you don't, I have like crew that like, kept coming in. And I remember that I did one video, it's called Waka Wadana. It was played in the national TV in Kenya.
Wow.
Yeah. And all that we did for fun of it, right?
Yeah.
And imagine that a kid like that, I'm going to Ohio, performing in a Somali community, going to Minnesota, performing in Somali community, then had a baby. It's like, what am I doing? Yeah. But I'm glad I had a baby there.
Yeah.
Because baby changed you, how you think, and the way you operate. So because holding a baby, that shows you like, you're on a different level.
Yep.
That you have to push it back. But I was still doing a little bit here there. But my first baby, it was a baby girl. She actually changed my life to a better life. So that's when I had to pick up another job. I worked 2 jobs to just make sure I give a better life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Man, what You have three kids?
I have three. I have two girls and a boy.
Okay.
Yeah, my two girls are oldest and the boy is the youngest.
Okay. I can't imagine having multiple, man.
When I first then I had second, I was like, okay, I think I was shooting for a boy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, then my mind is like, well, that's it. You only make the girls.
Yeah.
She's like, try a third one. Oh, no. Yeah. But yeah, alhamdulillah, God bless me to a boy. And that's when I was like, you know what? I think I'm good for now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're good. This is it. Yeah.
That's it.
So you started doing, you were doing the music here. And around what year is that when you're doing music?
So the music started about... For me, about end of 2005,
okay.
That's when I started doing it. It started on, I don't know if you know this chat named Partalk.
Yeah.
So, you know, it started from there because we had Somali groups and everything because we used to talk a lot of crap over there.
Yeah.
So what we used to do is that we use, you know, old computers. You grab a beat, you just like keep yap-yapping. That's where we started. And it become where people are dissing each other. So it become like huge. And from there is where we start doing, okay, you know what, I think this music thing is getting somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's where we started. Then when my name that attached to me is called Finger Flip, it was when it was like end of 2008, and my daughter was born 2009.
Okay.
And that was like, okay, now when I'm coming up, I have a baby.
Got
but thank God I did.
Yeah.
Because it's like God sending you a message. Say, right. Hey, that's not the path you want to go. You know, you switch a little bit. Take a break and do something else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Let's talk about how you know, I did read up a little bit on you, but how doing music kind of transitioned into getting into film. So what does that look like?
So I'm always was a supportive of, so I have a close friend, kind of close family friend. Her name is Fatima.
Okay.
She even worked with the state. She always used to call me to bring the kids together because our goal was to take the kids out of the street and do something good. So her job was like hosting events to like police, firefighter, so people can listen to good stuff. So that way they do something good. So she always called me, hey, Musa, can you bring the kids? I'll pay your gas. So I used to play soccer, playing everybody out there. So one day, before that, what brought me to that, before all that, while I was doing my music, K9 is an artist from Canada. He's Somalian.
Okay.
I don't know if you heard the song Waving Flag. He did even World Cup for Waving Flag. When I go, oh, this is it's a famous song.
Okay,
it's
Yeah,
it's a really famous song. He came to Utah. He was looking for Somali actors. So he had a short film concept to see if this will go far. So in the community Utah, because I built it, it become a bad person because I was basically I was a rapper who making people bad because in our culture we don't believe in that rap and all that stuff. Our culture believes in the doing good and go to school and all that stuff. So the community, I already made myself a name because the bad guy. But they knew that I also not scared in front of the camera.
Yeah.
So when they said that they wanted to a Somali actor, and somebody called them, hey, since you're liking, you know, doing this thing, they're looking for Somali actors. You should go. I'm like, actor? Oh yeah, okay. Because I always wanted to be an actor, but I don't know where to start.
Yeah, yeah.
So I drove, got to Park City, met this guy first time because he was an inspiration for me. Then I met Robert Redford over there because he was the advisor.
Wow.
Of the film. So I met a lot of big actors that I don't even know who they are.
Yeah.
So when he took me out there, I was supposed to be only a huge background. No lines, no nothing. But then K9 and the Robert Redford looked at me that, can you memorize a line? It's like, what does that even mean? They give me a script and K9 explained to me, it's like, you're going to have to read it, memorize it because we're going to take the paper. Then you're going to have to act when somebody talks. Okay, then Robert looked at me and said, you know what? Let's go have a lunch, all of us. So where we took the lunch is like nothing but producers, actors. This is a Park City. Robert Redford owns the place.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like sitting at a table that I would never thought I would ever going to sit at that table. Nothing but actors. So I'm like, I need to go because I need to memorize this. I remember when and I sit somewhere, keep memorizing. And then I did well. And Robert Redford at the end came to me and said, because I had to keep going back there for 3 weeks. He comes and says, do you have an agent? What the heck is agent? My mom's like, what is agent? Like, are you asking me a cop or like an agent? Like, I don't know. Honestly, I really don't know what the heck is agent mean. And he laughed at me. I remember, he's like, oh, okay. So this is what I want you to do. I said, okay. I want you to go find agent. I want you to go take acting in school. I want you to do this because you do have the future and you are a quick learner. I highly recommend you do that.
Wow.
I took that to the heart. And but you got to understand, though, that time is when I was young. At that moment, I was that big when he told me that. Left that place. Week passed by. I went back to my soccer and hanging out with my friends. I didn't do no action. Then I was like, shoot, what shall I do? Then I used to work two jobs, budget, rent a car, and Xfinity. And so one day I was with the customer, and one of my good friends, he was talking to another guy, and he said, hey, isn't that guy look like Captain Phillip? You know, that film, movie come out, Captain Phillip, and my boy Barakat, he's like, he looks like that guy. Everybody looking at me, is it that look like? The guy he was talking to, his name is Dodge. Thanks to him, I didn't know nothing about agent. He's the one explained to me what agent is. He really came to me, he said, you really want should look into acting. I said, I think I did one acting. No, no, you really get into it. I want you to call this guy right now. So it was my first agent, David Lin. I call him. I said, hey, I got your number from Dutch. Okay, send me a picture. I took a picture, sent it to him. Do you have a resume? Like a job?
You're like Xfinity? I delivered papers. Said,
don't worry about it. Come see me. I went to his place, office, explained to me everything, and he signed me up right on the spot.
Wow.
But you understand, though, he signed a person that doesn't know nothing about what his agent is. What do we do in a class? Because I want somebody to explain to me everything. So I've been going to his class for me not understanding. Because, yes, I was doing acting. There was a great coaching out there and everything. But my surrounded, the people I'm sitting with, I'm not getting the energy back. So then go back to my good friend and the family, Fatima. When she called me, she wanted to help for bring the kids to this event so they can learn something. I brought the kids and I met this. I know you know Tua.
Yeah.
So Tua was there. He was doing a speech. And then I was about to leave because my job is to bring the kids and get the hell out of them, right? Yeah. So when I'm about to leave, and this guy's like, yeah, I'm an actor. I'm like, wait a second. Tattooed everywhere.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow. And I said, you know what? Let me sit down and talk to him. Because if he can do it, there's no way I cannot do it.
Yeah.
So that's when we connect and exchange information. And I didn't know that he was working with JD. And that's how. So I'm a type of person, if I met you and I know that you have something that will benefit both of you, like help me get where I want to, I will not stop contacting you. Because until you say, like, hey, you know what, leave me alone, just come see me. Yeah. So that's the type of person I am. So I was, man, when? And that's what I said, you know what, come on, I have something. And that's when we shoot Simone Gold.
Okay.
I played the Uber guy. I took my job serious when it comes to acting because I took it to the heart because I want to kill my role, bring the character alive. So when I did that, and that's when I met JD. I saw this guy, Sony camera, running, one boom, and one lighting, running around. I fall in love. The whole crew is like, this is the vibe I want. Not the class that I'll go. This is where I want to be. This is the where I want to spend more time. So I cut soccer.
Yeah.
I kept my friends hanging out. Keep coming to place all the time. And we shot Simone Gold, we shot Simone Gold 2. And that's when I was like talking to JD. It's like, hey, you know, I'm just trying to find, I don't want to push people, I want to fit in, like, I want to. So I remember we were at the Utah Film Festival and JD had an opportunity to shoot a film in LA. It's called Unseen. They were already planning to go, but I didn't know if I was a part of it. So I asked Damar, I asked the pal. They're like, oh, yeah, we are going. And I don't know if you're coming, though, because they didn't even know. Because I didn't even know if I'm part of the Inglewood. First thing I do, I call JD. Yo, you guys are going, right? I said, oh, yeah, we are going. It's like, I didn't say we. Oh, you're coming, right? He said, oh, me? Yeah, you're my sound guy. I feel like I had to work the next day. I need to go. My mind is like, they can wait.
Yeah.
It's a big opportunity. It's like, yeah, I'm going. So I go sick. I went with them. And that's where Inglewood started with me, with JD. It's the biggest thing ever to work with JD, because he's the type of person, if you pick up something and at least you're learning, you grow with him. And that's what I learned from JD, because I didn't know how to do sound. Even though he said, you're my sound guy, I didn't know nothing. Yes, I was holding a boom. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's count. I don't know. But I took a pen and paper. We worked with the production in LA. Every single thing they were doing, I was writing down. Every equipment they were using as a sound guy, I was writing down. By the time we came back, I said, hey, JD, we need this, 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 we need this. He didn't say no, because he was surprised that I'm taking a note.
Yeah.
And I took serious. Then we bought it, everything.
Yeah.
And that's how I become the sound guy, the sound engineer for Inglewood Films. And from there, I become a producer and helped me behind the camera.
Man.
I know, it's crazy.
So it's all out of drive and just the want to learn more.
I want to learn more. One phone call, you're coming, and I'm right there. If I'm coming, I'm learning.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not wasting no time. I want to be part of this, and I have to earn it, because in order for you to be part of it, you have to earn something. And I was the only one, always say that, take a pillow, learn something.
Mm-hmm.
I meant that, because if you want to be part of something, you either have to learn something or you just wasting their time, honestly. You know, you have to add something in the group. And what I add to the group and the family and Go Fems is like the sound.
Mm.
Because from when I learned from that, nobody hires sound, because I was the only one doing Inglewood sound.
Mm.
Dilo, Saya,
mm-hmm.
Anything JD does, I did the sound.
Mm.
Ajia.
Yeah.
Ultimate Sacrifice. All of them, I'm the one who did the sound.
Man.
Yeah. Because of, if it wasn't JD, I would not learn that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thanks to him.
Yeah. Going back to that that first shoot in California that you were doing the sound on, you said you know, all right, I got this job, but it can wait. How long was that shoot? How long were you out of town?
We were, I think it was a 5-day trip.
Okay. Did you just tell your job, like, hey, listen, I got a cold.
I'm sick. I'm going to take the next 2 days plus my next 2 days off.
Yeah.
I'll see you guys another day. Yeah. But I do have a sick days.
Uh-huh.
So they love me.
Okay.
But that time, they didn't know me as an actor.
Yeah, yeah.
But now they know me as an actor. So every time some big comes in, they work with me. So
That's good.
I wasn't nobody back then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk about, so again, acting, producing. I don't think a lot of people, and maybe even myself included, what all goes into producing a film? Like, what does the producer do for someone who would have no idea?
That's a great question. That's a really good question. Because nowadays, people in Utah, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to put Utah in the spot, but I had to. People like to get the name.
Oh, no doubt.
That's it.
And anything.
And they don't do nothing.
Yeah.
For me, to answer that question, producer. Producer is the guy who sets everything. So if I'm a producer for this project, I believe in this project, right? I'm the producer. My name is a label to it.
Yep.
I need to find funding for this thing. Find the locations. Find everything I can on my end. Even though I'm not. So there's a different type of production manager, producer. Example, the Shoebox.
Uh-huh.
Okay, let me take the example of the Shoebox. The Shoebox was our first SAG film, okay? Me, JD, Mandy, because we wanted our actors, like Damar, Pell, every actors in the group, and Aaron, we want them to focus as an actor.
Mm.
But three of us, we went to hell. The reason why I'm saying that is we all had to wear different hats. I had to be a producer, make sure those paperwork got done, because anybody who has done SAG can tell you this. It ain't no easy. It's not one-man job. It's not two-man job.
Got it.
Paperwork, meaning that you're going to have to send every actor's information, make sure they sign everything, send that back to deal with the SAC. You the one dealing with SAC. Make sure they bring it back. Make sure you pay all the actors. We shot it in the COVID. craziest time ever. Oh, make sure everybody takes a COVID test every single time.
Sheesh.
What are we doing? We're driving the Inglewood fan. We pick everybody up. Taking it back. Taking it back. I wear like different hats. Mandy wear different hats. JD, directing, producing, you name it, DP, all that stuff. He's doing it. And so being a producer, your job is not just a brand. Your job is to make sure this film find the funding. Make sure this film, everything is set. Communicate with the casting. Communicate with the production manager. Make sure the location is locked. Communicate with the director. Is there anything else we need to add on this? Communicate with what they call crafty. Make sure there's a food on the set, and the safety. Make sure we have a crew. Make sure we have the sound guy. We have the DP guy. We have that first AD guy. We have all that stuff.
Wow.
Your job is not easy. You make sure all that thing ties in together. Make sure everything is up to date, because those actors, anybody they have question, if there's a paperwork missing, who would they ask? A producer.
Wow.
You're not just running to the director. No, a producer. Producer is in the middle of the everything. It's like this. So if you're not that person and you're not doing all that job and you just want to get that name credit, then when do you get a bigger job for a producer? How the hell are you going to pull off?
Yeah.
So that's the thing. I had to wear a different hat. And I will not learn all that stuff if we didn't go through the shoebox the way we did.
Man.
Yeah, so I had to do sound. I had to be a producer, production manager. And JD and I and Mandy, I remember that. I still have a picture. We're like sitting in the room. We're like all writing a check. No, I'm serious. Every actor, said, we have something else we need to shoot. But we need to finish this right away, because SAG-AFTRA, they need a copy of every check.
Really?
Yeah. So we had to do that. We'll make sure we have the insurance cover. We have this cover. We have that. And nobody else in Utah can tell you, you have to do this process. No, we find our own way to do all that stuff.
Mm.
But to be a producer, you are the middleman standing. And that's why when paperwork is missing, when somebody needs to sign everything, they have to ask the producer.
Man, that's a large responsibility.
It's not easy. It's a responsibility, but it's the beauty of that. Because if you can pull off all that, later on, when you apply a job, your job becomes easy and simple, because now you get in a job with a bigger production where you don't run around the way we did. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, but it's not easy. It's a hard job. If you can't do it, don't take the name. Don't take the credit. Don't embarrass yourself.
Yeah.
But if you can do it, it's easy to do it sometimes, but it could be harder. But go through it. Learn from it and do it so you can earn the name in the right way.
Yeah. Man, you talked about SAG there, and for everyone watching this right now, we're recording this the 14th of September, so in the event that, the strike's over with, it is what it is. But if you could talk a little bit about SAG and also, kind of how that strike is impacting your life, because, like I said, you seem like a person that was constantly working, constantly doing things, and it's not like you're not, but you can't act right now.
Nope.
So what... For those who don't understand what SAG is, maybe go into that just a little bit and how they help you and kind of what the strike's all about. That might be a really loaded question.
No, it's good. It's a good question. SAG, actually, first of all, SAG is the guild, SAG-AFTRA. So to become actually a SAG member, you have to be in a feature film where you either play a good role that has multiple lines but multiple days.
Got it. Right? Okay.
You have to have at least 3 days tops to be in the film with you having alliance.
Okay.
So that will make you qualify as SAG-AFTRA, right? That's only qualifying. So you become a SAG-AFTRA qualifying, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then that, from there, you have to pay money. Yeah, I believe I don't know if the price change is $3,800 you pay one time.
Oh, okay.
To get the member, right?
Okay.
This other production pay that for you, but it depends who you work with. So you get that, you become a SAG-AFTRA. But every year, you pay dues twice a year.
Okay.
So usually it's like March or April, then October, right? What they do, when you're on set, you're protected. You have insurance, you have all that stuff, you are protected. And also when you get hired, they can't pay you less because you're SAG. Your lowest, it could be like 1,500, 12 to 1,500 a day.
Okay.
And if something on it's on, you have to have a, you know, I mean, they treat you as a psych after you have a trailer and all that stuff. So being a psych is great because of you known as an actor that who actually have done it a big film. So, but also being a psych actor, you can't just work on the union, like non-union or, you know, non-psych and everything. You can't work because what happens is you pay a penalty. What's hurting us right now is because SAG is strike right now. We can't work because we are SAG after, remember. And the only thing we can make as a business, this other project, maybe they approve, like it's like low budget SAG and all that stuff. They don't pay that much.
Got it.
But it's hurting all of us right now. We can't work. This October is coming right now.
Yeah.
Are we paying dues? I don't even know yet because we sent email. I believe some said that you don't have to pay right now because of the strike going on.
Yeah.
But the strike is hurting not only as an actor, also the production companies. They can't shoot nothing. The writers and everybody. So the economy, people think like, oh, this is just an acting. No, this is a real, real work.
Yeah.
We, same as we clock in, clock out, we work 12 hours a day. Like when we on set, we work 12 hours, like, or 8 hours. You know what I mean? We work same as everything, but we're doing something that we love. And like, you may be sitting on a desk, you're a manager and everything, but it's the same thing, but it's a different job.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine that it says that there's no job.
Yeah.
Lay off, go stay home until you get, it's the same thing. It's like we all get laid off right now. It's like lay off, people don't, they put on a different label on it and they strike, but all the actors are laid off right now, all the SAG actors.
Jeez. So
anybody who's not SAG right now, a benefit to it because they can work on union. They can work anywhere they want to right now and make money. So for me, how are we going to make money? So just like right now, we're shooting a film, we're shooting a music video, we're shooting it to this. I'm just, we're hustling here, there, just to survive until SAC comes with an, you know, negotiation, whatever they come with.
Yeah.
But they have to come quick because right now it's not.
Because it's been looking months. Good.
It's been going and going. They keep, every time I check the email, because they keep sending us email, are we gonna get there? We all getting there. You know, all that we had is like, oh, we, you know, there. But they shut a lot of films, like Deadpool. What's it called? A lot of big films right now. They don't see that. They guess those actors are millionaires and everything. They have money. But what about us?
Yeah.
Even though what we're fighting right now is a great thing, because what they're fighting for right now is that, you know, to get the insurance for SAG, you have to meet at least, you have to make at least 26 to 30,000 a year. What about if you're not getting booked that much?
Yeah.
How are you going to make that? But you're also paying the dues and you also pay the $3,500. You are a SAG member, but you're still not coverage like the other person. Also, when you're in a film, sometimes you're not getting a royalty because you're not done. It's crazy, bro.
It's a lot, yeah.
Isn't it? A known actor. And but hopefully there's something good come up, but they need to make it quick because as an actor, a SAG actor, we are hurting right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that kind of like when you get into acting or someone gets into acting, is it kind of a goal to be a part of SAG because of those benefits or?
So, great question. A lot of people jump in, say that, I want to be SAG. Don't jump into SAG if the job is not coming to you more often.
Okay.
Example, I don't wait for my manager to call me, apply job, and knock doors.
Yeah.
Because if you're passionate about something and you really love the stuff that you do, you don't wait. You should not wait for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's good to have, you have a manager who look out for you, your contract, looking for a job for you. But do you want to just wait for him or her, or do you want to also you not gonna, because this is you.
Yeah.
So that's what I do. I send emails. I make calls. I network. Every time I go to events, I meet people. I network. I introduce myself. Sometimes I just go to other country, just network. So that's how I build my my networking. I like to get to know people. What kind of project you do? How can I get into yours, right? Because I'm the one who need it. So the more stuff that I do, my name is going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why if you're not getting booked a lot, SAG is not the way you need to go.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have a resume, or a lot of jobs you have done that people maybe want to hire you more, you do not want to go SAG.
Okay.
Wait until they force you to become SAG.
Because
usually when you do a lot of SAG films, feature films, there's going to be a time going to be like, hey, you know what? You've been doing a lot of these feature films. You have to be SAG.
Okay.
Wait for that time.
Yeah.
But if you feel like, you know what? My friend is a SAG. I should be a SAG. Don't do it
yeah.
because of your friend. Wait for your turn. When you think, not anyone else, not somebody tell you you're ready, when you think you're ready, and you know that you're being getting booked a lot, then yes. If you think you can get, let's example, if you live in Utah, and you know you're going to get, you keep getting the roles from out of state, uh-huh. Yes, become SAC.
Okay, yeah.
The reason why I want to become SAC, I was getting booked for out of state, out of country, right? Yes, I want to be SAC, mm-hmm. right? So when I saw myself going there, and then when I got booked for the Apple TV, and that's what I was like, you know what? I want to be SAC.
Yeah.
Because I'm already SAC eligible. What am I waiting for?
Yeah. Right?
And that's when I was like, you know what? I just finalized it. I become SAC. Mm. Then from there, more doors open for me. Like, okay, the graduate comes in, and then we're doing our own films here. Then the Malbat comes in. Yeah. And so a lot of people comes in because of like, you got to be hustled, man. You have to knock doors. Don't wait for your manager. They're doing their job already because the only way for them to get paid is if they have to give you a job.
Yeah, yeah.
Simple as that. So it's not like they're sleeping anywhere, but also you should not even sleep. You should also knock at doors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to spend just a little bit longer talking about film, and then we're going to get into kind of the end, the rapid fire questions that I like to ask. I want to talk about two different films, and you can decide where we start. So Algea is coming out, and for those who follow the podcast, JD's been on here twice. He talked about Algea last October, and then when he was on here this year. And that is coming out. October 26th will be the premiere. You can buy tickets. I'll put the link in the podcast description because I don't necessarily have that link right now. But I've already bought my tickets. I know you were a producer on Algea. The other film I wanted to talk about is the one that is doing really well in Malaysia. I want to talk about your experience with that. But whatever one you would like to start with, let's do that, and then we'll go into the other film.
Let's start with Algea.
Okay.
First of all, get your ticket now because it's already getting sold out.
Yeah. I got mine. I got two. So.
It's been, Algea is really, really, this is 2 year shoot film, 2 year running. First feature film. I was the second feature film because JD already shot the fair level, but this is my first feature film that I produced. And, really great film. Everybody that we did a private screening that seen it, they fall in love with it. So it's a crazy, it has a lot of great story. It's not scary that you think, I don't want to give it away a lot, but it's a must-watch movie. It's coming October 26th, but the ticket's already getting, sold out already. So get your ticket now. I'm really proud of it. It's our baby. And when I say it's our baby, because if I put the time in and I believe it in, and that's what I call our baby. So Algea is my baby, JD's baby, Damar, Cheyenne. There's a lot of people behind it. But get your ticket. It's a great film. October 26th, Megaplex and John Common. Come see us, and you will see me and everybody else. Take a picture. Come see us. Let's talk about Malbat. Malbat. How did I get into Malbat even funnier? I was at home watching movie at night. I only use WhatsApp. How many people use WhatsApp app in the United States? None. Not a lot.
Not a lot, yeah. Unless they have, like, family out of the country. Or,
exactly.
Yeah.
I was watching a movie, actually. I remember watching a movie. And also wanted to play my game on PS5. But I got text message from WhatsApp app. I looked at it one side. I was like, Alexa, WhatsApp app? I grabbed it. I was like, oh, it's a scam. Before I put it down, there was a word in a text message. It says a Bacara. Mm. That's where I grew up. That's where I was born. Hello, that Bacara. I grabbed it again. I said, let me read it. It was a proposal saying, hey, we have a film. We want to shoot. And we think you fit in the role. I would like to give you the opportunity to audition. And it's called Bacara. I called my manager in the middle of the night because they only communicated. What, Musa? I said, hey, I want you to take a look at this. Okay, send it to me. I will look a couple of days. Okay, I text him back. Say, hey, I'm forwarding this to my manager, and she will get back to you guys. Take a couple of days. My manager comes back. This guy's not a scam. This guy's a real.
Well, you never know. You know what I'm saying?
Forgot about it after my manager called me back.
Yeah.
I was like, real. Then I was like, okay, even though it sounds real, it's like, no, I want to see the faces. We request a Zoom meeting. So time differences, it's nighttime late for us, day for them. Me and my manager and them, we talk to each other, and they're like, okay, we'd like to offer you this, but we'd like you to do an audition. So they send me, first they send me the treatment so I can read it. I always like the, even before I do it, I like to see what the film we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Explain what treatment is exactly. For people that don't know.
Treatment is, they short of explaining what is the story about.
Mm-hmm.
So where is the story, where is it going to go, where is it going to be shooting, where is it a true story or not? So what is the story all about? They make it short on one page instead of sending you 150 pages. Mm-hmm. It's only one. Just explaining what it is.
Perfect.
When I read that, I was like, wow, it's a true story. And I want to try it. So they sent me, because it was requested from the director to see if I can pull off. There's a two scene he wanted to see. It was an emotional scene.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing is, it was my first time playing any emotional scene. I played a lot of roles. Emotionally, it was not one of them. Because of I fall in love with the story, I was like, I got to try it.
Yeah.
Sent it to me. I did two takes. And I sent it to them. I didn't hear anything back. It's like, that's it. I didn't get it. That's what I said. I didn't get it. Because usually, as an actor, this is actually big, big help for all the actors. If you do audition, don't look back. Just go for the next. Because your job, you already done it. You already have one win. You got the audition. The director requested, you did the audition, you send a video. That director knows who you are. Even if the video is bad or not, you already have one win.
Mm-hmm.
Put that in your head. That's one thing I have learned and a lot of people tell me. Put that in your head and that way and you move forward. But for me, I couldn't even go forward because I fall in love with this.
Yeah.
Then a week passed by, then I got another text message. We'd like to offer you the role. Let's talk about the process, like agreement. What are you going to agree? We go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. This is the hardest part. They wanted me 22 days.
Oh.
I have no vacation left. I have no sick days left. I have to make a decision. I talked to my manager. He's trying his best to find a way. He couldn't. Talk to HR. They're trying to find a way. They couldn't. It's funny. One time I did a commercial for Xfinity.
Mm-hmm.
So the president of Xfinity fell in love for my performance. He had to invite me to live streaming TV on Denver for me to ask me a question, how I felt. And because of a creative relationship, I forgot we had a one-on-one meeting that was coming up. I didn't even know.
Mm.
So I remember just like yesterday, it was Friday, I was sitting, I just go home, it's like, oh, email come out, notification, oh, your one-on-one coming up. It's like, one-on-one with who? I looked at it, it was him. And I'm already upset, like, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
I need to go. I have one option, leave your job, go, or leave this one lifetime opportunity and just stay at work. So with me and him, we just chatting. It's like, hey, how is everything? Because he knew I was an actor. How's your acting going? How is it? I was like, oh. It's like,
Wait a minute.
How's my acting going? It's like, okay, let's talk this.
Yeah.
I don't want to go behind my manager and everything. I say, hey. It's like, first of all, before I say this, say, I'm not going behind my manager. I had to be upfront clear. But I have a one lifetime opportunity. And I don't know what to do from here. I worked for this company for a long time. But this is one lifetime opportunity. A person like me come from different country and it's not going to come around easy.
Yeah.
What shall I do? He looked at me and said, do you have a laptop? I said, yes. Okay. You have done a lot for this company. If we can't give anything back to you, well, who we are? Take your laptop. Let me take care of this. I couldn't believe it because I had to ask that question again. I don't have no time. No, the reason I'm saying take your laptop is you're still gonna work.
Yeah.
But I want you to go follow your dreams.
Wow.
I had emotional real quick coming my face like I couldn't believe it, and he can see that I'm like on getting to emotion. It's like I'll let you go right now. Let me take care of this and that. One, I felt bad because I sounded like I'm talking behind my manager, which I wasn't. And but at the same time, it's not like my managers are always not supporting me. They always supported me.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt guilty because I had to leave and them working, for me. But that's how I end up to go to Turkey, take time away from my family, then fly back, then go back to Turkey again. So the first time we go to Gaziantep, dry, hottest country ever, Turkey. Mm. We shot. Great experience. I met team. They treat me really well because they have a good team. So also, again, I'm always learning from there, even though I'm an actor. So they flew me from here to there. My job is to make sure I don't mess up. Mm-hmm. I take serious for my role. So every single day at night, I make sure I go back to script. Even though I know the script to my heart, I want to make sure I'm performing right. But thanks to all the actors like Sam, Nafis, and everybody, you know, my Dahiri, the director, Adrian Teh, they always like put me on the spot to wear a great actor. So the people that I'm performing with, they are really top actors in Malaysia. Mm. Feeling the energy, so I gotta have to bring my A game. So my hottest one was actually Adana, where is the second city in Turkey, because 9 a.m. is already freaking 128 degrees.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And I'm serious, it's hot as hell. Yeah. At nighttime, even though there's no sun, it's so hot. Ugh. So I had to perform. There's one scene I did. The most emotional part is that part. I remember there's like 200 people, like, surround me just watching that scene because that was my scene. I'm on the ground doing that for 10, 20 times. It's so hard, but I had to perform, so I had to block all that because people were watching, but it was the best experience I ever had because going out of country doing that, then come back here, then go to Malaysia, that was another one. But no, I had a great time. But even though it was hot, it was crazy, but kudos to the crew, casting crew, for always being there for me and always to look out and make sure that I've been taken care of.
Man.
Yeah, it was the beautiful film. They did that film, if anybody have watched it, Black Hawk Down. If you watch Black Hawk Down, if you see the film only showed American side. Mm-hmm. I'm not blaming Hollywood. I'm not blaming that because the story is so big.
Yeah.
But America is not the only one who went to Somalia. Pakistan, Malaysia, France, Italy, everybody went there.
Yeah.
But Malaysia's part, nobody showed because they're the one who actually like help America most, like their life, the military take it out for them.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They're the one who did it. But nobody showed that part. The director took him like how many years for him to develop that? Because after he did, I think he did a film named, there's another feature film that he did. After that, that's when he wanted to start shooting. When I was listening to his broadcast, this film is for Malaysia. This story was not told before.
Yeah.
90% of this film is true story, based on true story. The 10% that he created was my role.
Wow.
Yeah. He didn't want it to do a film to fight. He had the license, for my role to create that scene, to make the film complete.
Man.
I feel so honored and special for that because I didn't even knew that until when the interview comes up. And that's what I was like. What? The 10%? But no, I make sure that I killed it, and he can prove that. But I took it to the heart because I played a lot of Somali films.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first film that does not show Somali all bad.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen that when you're a Somali actor, you only have two options. You either play a character for terrorists.
Yep.
Or homeless or whatever it is, they don't give you a character that you want. So I'm really, really honored that he gave me this role because of like showing that I work for UN. And a great role. I don't want to give it away because the film is still on the theater.
Yeah.
It's doing really great, by the way. Thanks to Malaysia people. But my role he created is a beautiful role and shows that how great this film is because of how he made this film for Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Malaysia should be happy and should be like really excited because of nobody ever thought this anybody will make a Malaysian story. He did it.
Is it in theaters here in the U.S.? I know it's doing really, really well.
So right now it's really well in Malaysia.
Okay.
So it's been less than a month right now. So
yeah.
Damn, they're crashing it. Like people show up. That's people great. Watch it because it's so great. They have a plan. They haven't... share it yet, but they have a plan to worldwide.
Okay.
And also, there's a big streaming talk. So okay, that will be even America.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that because I can't give no information. But this film is really not, and even though it's for Malaysia, honestly, I want my Somali people to watch it because when they shot for Black Hawk Down, they showed the Somali side nothing but bad people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we don't want to be, you know, I mean, labeled to that. You know, I mean, yes, we are a country that we're trying to figure out what the heck is going on. Why are you guys in my country? Get out of our country, right?
Yeah.
Everybody's trying to, you know, save themselves. But this guy showed why.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So kudos to everybody. But this is a great film. And I'm an honor, really honored to be part of it and then play for my part.
Man, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Coming full circle, and I don't, you know, this is ignorance on my part. I don't know what it's like in Somalia now, but do you ever go back? Would you ever go back just kind of visit? Is that something you would want to do? Or
I would love to, if it's safe.
that's what I'm,
If it's safe, yeah. But I would love to.
Okay.
Even though I don't have nothing left back there for me.
Everyone's here.
In California. States. Yeah, in the state. I would love to go see. I haven't went back since I left.
Yeah.
I don't even know what it looks like right now.
Yeah.
But I have seen a lot is way changed, really good, in a good way. So hopefully it stays that way.
Okay.
I would like to one day take my kids, show where I come from.
Yeah.
That's my goal. So, but not right now.
Yeah,
If it's safe, then yes. Okay. But yeah, it's always in my... It's always in my plan. I have to because show my kids like, hey, this is where your father come from.
Yeah.
This is what you want to see. So,
yeah.
But yeah, it's one of my plan.
Okay.
Yeah.
It'd probably blow their mind. You know what I mean? Just because you have a pretty good life for them. And do you talk to them about what it was like as a kid?
I did. I always talk about it because they, as you know, that a lot of people watch TVs here. When they watch the news, first thing, Africa, they only show you the bad spot.
Yeah.
Africa is so beautiful. There's stuff in Africa that's not even in the United States. Same as Malaysia is so freaking beautiful. They don't even have the stuff that Malaysia has. Not even Vegas don't have that, right? But do we see that? No, until you go there and see it, right?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of beautiful things out there. But I want my kids to see it in real life. So, yeah, I always talk to them. I always show them. I even show them that the life that people are going through here, even American people, like they have to wake up every day to work when you can own... Back there, back our house, we own our own shit. We wake up in the morning, not worry about anything.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's a life that people live there, but people don't understand that.
Yeah.
They only show that the ghetto place. Every country has the ghetto place.
Yeah.
But yeah, I want to see. I want to show my kids in where I come from and how people live in.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
For sure. Okay. So at the end of all my interviews, I always do kind of rapid fire stuff.
Okay.
Right. So. Some of these will be one-word answers. You can give context. You don't have to give context, you know. The first question is always easy. You have 24 hours to live. What's your last meal?
24 hours to live. What's my last meal? 24 hours to live. I will not need a meal. I will pray, stay with the family. Spend time with the family. That's gonna be my meal.
Okay.
Because if I already know that's my 24 hours, that I don't know after 24 hours I'm gonna be gone.
Yeah.
Last place I wanna be is with my family and make sure that I'm there with them.
You're the first person that's ever said that. It just goes to show that everyone who else has been on this show is just selfish.
Yeah. meal is not my mind.
Okay.
That's the last thing.
I like that a lot. You said you were big into hip hop, right? That's kind of, what got you in the film. You were doing your own music. So on this podcast, I as well love hip hop. I have my whole life. We celebrated 50 years of hip hop just recently.
Yeah.
Give me three essential albums that you think everyone should listen to in hip hop.
Oof. Oh, my God. I'm old school, first of all. I don't know on top of my head the names, but I can tell you my favorite rappers and Dr. Dre.
Okay, so probably The Chronic or 2001, either one. Okay,
the other one, Eminem.
Mm-hmm.
I know he's a white guy, but he's the killer.
Hey, you know what? Sometimes white guys are okay.
Yeah, I also like his movie.
8 Mile.
Yeah. That's the reason why it pushed me to more hip hop because of that film.
Mm.
Kendrick Lamar.
Mm.
Yeah, that's Kendrick Lamar. His lyrics is deep.
Yeah.
He, people were like, how come you didn't say Drake? How come you didn't say 50? No, I go by lyrics. I'm old school, even though Lamar is not that old school, but I like his lyrics. I like, because when you're old school, you don't want to listen to these days like,
A lot of stuff.
You like to listen to something people want to listen, right?
Yeah.
So I'm all about like lyrics and people want to listen to. So yeah, those are my three top.
And that has a message too.
I don't want to forget the king, Tupac, my boy.
There you go.
Tupac is top down. Yeah, he's what I like about Tupac. Every song he did is message behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You know what I mean? Yeah, he don't just write because he pushed buttons for the government because he sees the struggle.
Yep.
So yeah, Tupac too.
Yep.
So.
Okay. favorite movie, and if you want to name a couple like in different genres of film, that's fine. But if you have one, that's always your go-to.
American Gangster, Denzel.
Mm-hmm.
The Trainer, Denzel.
Mm.
I know I'm keep going to Denzel. People are like, what the heck is wrong with you? Shoot. Yeah.
And, I mean, Training Day and American Gangster are both great.
They're both great, and also The Equalizer.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I'm a Denzel fan.
He's on his third one now, right?
Yeah, he's on the third one. I'm a Denzel guy. Sorry for other actors like Tom Cruise and all that stuff. I'm a Denzel guy because I love his acting. And he's always, like, he's a director. So you can tell when he's acting, like, he brings it to A game.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite. He Got Game came out when I was in, like, fourth or fifth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved that movie. And then anything he put out after that, I just made sure I watched.
Yeah. And my other favorite movie, Algier.
There you go.
Yeah, for real.
October 26th.
October 26th. You better come see me. Yeah.
Okay. So this kind of coincides with the film question.
Okay.
But if you could remake one movie, so you can act in it, you can produce, what movie are you remaking?
If I'm going to remake one movie and acted in it. Was that, they messed it up. Was that Will Smith, the space movie?
Independence Day?
Independence Second.
Oh, okay.
I will remake that. They messed it up. I liked the first one, really good. Will Smith killed it.
Oh, yeah, the second one was terrible.
Yeah, they changed it to all the fun and all that stuff. I would like to remake it, be in it. And not bring that actor, bring Will Smith back for that film. Yes.
Yeah.
That's my favorite one.
I was kind of surprised he didn't do the second
one. No, he didn't. Yeah. They just picked, because it's about money, they just picked and they picked the other kid to become, that's it, the little boy, the dad. Yeah, it's all about money. Movies become right now, it's all about, let's make money.
Yeah.
Where before it used to be like, bring the story alive. It's not anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, last question, and you may have already given your answer to this, but you're putting on your dream concert, so just your dream concert. This isn't for anybody else. You're not trying to sell tickets to this concert. It's your dream concert, so I need you to pick four acts, dead or alive. I need who they are. It could be group, individual, solo artist, whatever. And then I need the order that they will come out. So opener all the way to closer. Because if you know anything, you're doing shows back when you were doing music.
The opening for me?
No. Well, if you want to be the headliner, that's fine.
I'm opening for them. That'll be good. The four, I will say it. Number one, hip-hop, right?
Any genre. Doesn't matter. This is for you.
For me. Oh, my God. Snoop Dogg. Holy crap.
Mm.
Of course, Eminem. Jay-Z, Dr. Dre, oh my God, yes, those are going to be those are going to be like, back then when I was hip-hop, just even be on the stage, just hold the mic, not even say anything with them, that would be dream come true.
When you were doing shows and doing music, did you ever do any opening, for any bigger
acts? They had an opening for me, so Ohio, we did a big stage. I always have a crew. So me and my friend Sharmarka used to go by the Sherwa. My boy Adiftah used to go by Dollar Flip.
Mm.
And we had our own group. So because we were so big on social media, basically on a Partok, people knew who we are. We had people open for us.
Mm.
We packed the freaking warehouse. people opened for us, and we come in, and we just took over the whole thing.
That's
so, yeah, I never opened for anybody. Yeah. So they opened for me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I am not trying to clown, but I used to like music and, yeah. And back then. But thank God.
That's great.
My life changed. I will say this. It's not how you start. It's how you finish. So even though I was in hip-hop, God directed me to, this is not what you need to do. This is what you need to do. Mm-hmm. Everything you do have plan for you, what you're supposed to do next.
Yeah.
So if you would ask me this 10 years ago, most of you going to be an actor, I'll look at you and laugh at you.
It's yeah.
Like, get the hell out of here. Yeah. But this will not happen at all if it was not the people I was surrounded with. So thanks to J.D. Allen, Ingo Films, Damar Jones, people I was around a lot, Lenny Uto, Zella Films. Yeah, I did a film for them. So yeah, it's all about the people you surround with. But all that was not possible also if your family was not supportive.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks to my wife, my kids, my family, though, who always like allow me to take that time and do and believe in me. So without them, I don't think anything will be possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. Well, let everyone know where they can find you on socials. You know, look up your films, all of that.
Instagram, Musa Aden, MusaAden officials. Our website, theinglewoodfilms.com, T-H-E, Inglewoodfilms, all one word, .com. Get your ticket from there also. My movies, once you connect with me on Instagram, you will see it, or you can search my name, Musa, M-U-S-A-A-D-E-N, on IMDb.
Perfect, man. Thank you. It was really good to meet you in person. Man,
the honor is all mine, man. Thank you for having me, bro.
Thank you.
I always wanted to be here, and we made it happen. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then you know what? When you're producing your next film, yeah. And I tell JD this too, you need a 6'2", bald, like slightly handsome,
dude,
pasty gentleman. I'm your guy. You know what I mean? Be in the background.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Hey, man.
Thank you, bro.
No, thank you. No, I really appreciate it. Thank you.
During the spookiest time of the year, there are a few guidelines all ghosts and goblins should follow. Always stay on sidewalks. Never go to a stranger's house. And never go out alone.
Once you see it, it's too late. Day 4 of 31 Days of Halloween. Smile.
What is it you like to talk about?
My patient. Hi. I know you're nervous. I just want to have a chat.
I'm seeing something no one else can see except for me. It's smiling at me.
In your care died brutally in front of you.
I need to find an explanation for what happened.
It's smiling at me. It's smiling at me.
Cases involving 19 victims with a direct line linking them all together.
You said only 19. Why is it that everybody else who's seen it is dead and you're alive? I've seen it too.
You?
Get away from me!
How long between each victim's death?
None of them survived longer than a week.
Today's my fourth day.
I am not gonna keep running.
I have to face it.
How does it make you feel?
I'm just really scared that something bad is going to happen. Rose.
Released September 30th, 2022, Smile was written and directed by Parker Finn. It had a budget of $17 million and made $217.4 million at the box office. Smile is rated R for strong, violent content and grisly images. The film stars Sosie Bacon, who, I won't lie, I'm not familiar with at all, but she does a very amazing job. The marketing for this movie, prior to it coming out, was great. If you may remember listening to this podcast, you're a sports fan. They placed actors in the stands at different sporting events to where the camera would see them smiling. I know that doesn't sound scary, but these smiles are without a doubt not your run-of-the-mill happy smile. It's a very, very creepy look. Here is a synopsis for the film. After witnessing a bizarre, traumatic incident involving a patient, Dr. Rose Cotter starts experiencing frightening occurrences that she can't explain. As an overwhelming terror begins taking over her life, Rose must confront her troubling past in order to survive and escape her horrifying new reality. Smile is a psychological supernatural horror film. If you were a fan of the horror movie It Follows, which we actually reviewed last year on 31 Days of Halloween, I think you will really like Smile. It's in the same vein as It Follows in that there is something that's coming after the main character. And you don't necessarily see it as the viewer. Other people don't necessarily see it. Rather, you see, well, people smiling. And again, it's not a cheerful, oh, I'm at Universal Studios smile. It's more like a, oh, I'm a lunatic and I get pleasure from causing people pain smile. Throughout the film, there is a very uneasy feeling. And that's just not when the scary parts are happening. And oftentimes in horror movies, that's very hard to do. We follow Dr. Rose Cotter throughout the film from someone who seems to have their life together, a psychiatrist who helps patients, to someone who is completely unraveling. I don't want to give away any spoilers from the movie because I do believe this is a must-watch horror film. You can watch Smile on Amazon Prime, Paramount Plus, YouTube, or Sling TV. You can also rent it at all the regular spots. Smile 2 is scheduled to be released October 18th, 2024. So I'm sure we will cover that for 31 Days of Halloween next year. We will see you tomorrow for day 5 of 31 Days of Halloween. I hope everyone enjoyed this episode. Hope you enjoyed that interview with Musa. Hope you enjoyed 31 Days of Halloween Day 4. We will be back next week talking some NFL. Also having another installment of 31 Days of Halloween. Again, don't forget, every day leading up to Halloween, we will review a horror film here on the Will Wonder Pod feed. And do remember, October 17th, it's a Tuesday night. Bar Name Sue, 8136 South State Street. I will be interviewing all of the Inglewood Films team to talk about their upcoming movie, Algea, God of Pain, which you heard a little bit about with Musa in the interview. It's free to the public, starts at 6 p.m. We're going to have tons of giveaways, so make sure to come out. Until then, follow the pod on Instagram at the Will Wonder Pod. Follow me on Twitter at DJ Will Wonder, and we will continue to roll with 31 Days of Halloween tomorrow. Peace.
This has been a March 15th Media production. Make sure to subscribe, rate, review the Will Wonder Pod. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time. Peace out.